So we are in this series called Seasons of Love, and it was really my intention today to actually sort of share the pulpit with my wife, because we're talking about Eros, and my wife is a better speaker in that. I'm just kidding, okay? But we will kind of jumpstart her in the dialogue because of the amount of content to unpack this little topic called Eros. There are so many layers to look at it, all right? So I do my best to help to see the contrast, what our culture is saying and what God is saying, and help you to understand why does it make every sense to follow what God is saying. And that's my whole intention. Before it becomes this little word erotic or eros, and a lot of you who have been a Christian knows that the Bible talks about no sex before marriage. Everybody knows that. But a lot of people do not practice that. Before it became white noise, before it's something that just, Pastor is going on this again, just buzzing, just set aside, look at my phone, I heard enough, all this dinosaur thinking, no longer relevant. Yes, makes sense 40 years ago, but the world has changed, all of that. Before it became really a white noise, I want you to give me the next 30 minutes. And I want you to take a fresh thought and fresh heart, even as we talk about this important subject. So in this Seasons of Love, obviously today we're going to talk about Eros, sexual love. And I think we have this theme called Love Unlocks All Doors. And the theme of Love Unlocks All Doors is trying to say that because of love, you open an incredible door in your life, in the whole different layers of relationship you have. So which is why we got agape, God kind of a love, potentially to love people that's very unlovable, your enemies, people that you hated, people that you thought they betrayed you, they stabbed your back, and now you got to love them back. That's why agape is there. And then you got storge, which is the family love. Well, what's happening within your sibling, your parents, and some of us no longer talk with our parents, and so long I never sing the song. We don't talk anymore. Okay, anyway. And then you got filio, which is really what we call a brotherly love. And I think that's what the church practices. So whenever you join a live group, and hopefully there's this level of filial love. And I pray that in this season, you kind of unlock some open doors. The most incredible story I've ever gathered in this season was really one of the live group members who shared about, because love unlocked all doors. And this person thought of a friend in this series and thought of a friend that have not contacted for a long time. Decided to give that friend a call, and that friend confided to this particular person that the person was thinking about committing suicide. Wow, thought about that. So you never knew, one text, one phone call, an act of love can unlock whatever closed door in someone's life. You cannot know the extent of what it means when we decided to understand the way God designed and the power of love. Okay, now. But we're going to focus on Eros today. Very quickly, let me give you a statement and then unpack it a little bit from a cultural and statistical point of view. Eros is not a word in the Bible, which means you look at the Bible in the Greek, you cannot find the word Eros. But Eros is clearly described in the Bible and talk about it. If you read the Song of Solomon, the Bible was very graphic as Solomon described his lover from top to bottom. Okay, you want to know the detail, you got to read. But God is the author of erotic love. That means God is the designer to put in every one of us the capacity to erotically love the opposite sex. We'll come to that shortly. Until our culture twisted this expression of love. Which means that, like never before, since the 40s, of what they call the sexual revolution, which is really the birthing of pornographic magazine, was trying to help our culture to make one of the massive shifts when it comes to this area, which is, since we have this ability, we have this instinct, so for those of you who are not married, how do you express that? That's for that magazine comes across. And ever since then, it has flooded every arena of society. I think as a pastor, the youngest I've ever seen that we have to deal with was a child as young as 8 or 9 years old. And it is very common for you to go to school and that particular age group of people, for them to serve around and be able to watch, and they did not know what they were watching, which is why some kids will emulate a certain act. So erotic thinking of our culture has not just moved to the kids, it has moved to the teens. And obviously today I'm not here to talk about the teen statistics of teens pregnancy, teens promiscuity and all of that. But if I can just move it to the college level, where the whole entire promiscuity with us growing more in our cognitive and ability to understand and desire is expressed even in the greater extent in college years. So when we were ministering to college students back about 10 and 10 plus and 15 years ago, we consistently hear of and know of students who sell their body in order for them to get an iPhone or to get something, and that can be one night stand, and all this extremely common. At the moment you move into the spectrum of young adults, it becomes even more scary when you actually think about and statistically look at that. It was stated statistically, let me just kind of refer a little bit to my statistical note here. It was said that in 2019, there was a survey done. And the survey shows that this is done in China, where only less than 7% who thinks that premarital sex is wrong. It shows the amount. Durex did couple of different statistics. They always do it almost every year, but to some extent, they have refrained from doing a certain perspective, okay? And I'll tell you a little bit shortly. Durex says that it's very common that for an Asian person, before they actually get married, they can have anywhere more than a dozen already sexual partners. 2014, in China, it was already stated they have averaged about 20 sexual partners before they actually get married. 2017, a statistic was done in UK by Nectar Sleep, which is a mattress survey, and they did over 2,000 over people. 2017, it was stated that a man had an average of 8 sexual partners and a woman 7. 2018, 1 year later, the same survey was done over that many of people. It was stated that men had 26 sexual partners and women had 19 before they decided to settle down. It shows the amount of promiscuity in today's world. Statistically, it shows that 40% of men will lie about their sexual past. When they tell a partner, they won't tell everything. They pretend to tell that, well, you know, I did that, but they never tell everything. When you moved on to a married couple situation, the whole statistics that shows that whenever someone had cohabitation or promiscuity, and I know two are very different, okay, but whenever someone who did not honor this whole thing that God has created, erotic, in a boundary of marriage, the possibility of divorce, the possibility of depression, the possibility of having anger issue, the possibility of, I mean, the whole smack of possibility was way heightened because when someone did not honor that part. And some of you may be seated here and say, Pastor, you know, when it comes to all this, it's really a preference. What works for you, works for you. What works for me, works for me. I'm just created to be someone who I prefer to have a lot of these activities before I get married. That's just the way I think. It's right. Now, I want you to know, when it comes to all this sexual thing, it's not preferences. It's that there's a huge difference between preference. I prefer to wear blue today, and Yila prefer to wear gray. There's no outcome objective with that preferences. That means he wear gray, I wear blue. There's nothing wrong, except you wear red. The bull will come after you. Okay, I'm just kidding, okay? But this has a different outcome. So it's not a matter of preference, because the outcome shows this is the fruits of it. So I even tell people, if you do not want to believe the Bible, you believe what the statistic tells you. And the statistic has moved not about how promiscuous you are, and this is your ended result, the statistic now has moved to, if you have an array of less than 10 sexual partners, this is your possibility of divorce. If you have more than 10 sexual partners, this is your possibility of marriage. If you have only 2 sexual partners, and which is what the statistic says, you have way lesser chance of having divorce. The statistics has moved not just about before sex before marriage or sex after marriage. The statistics has moved now to how many sexual partners you actually have and the possibility of having a greater marriage. So it's not a preference. It's not what the culture thing, what works for you, what works for you. It's not. Because God has never designed it to be that way. If I can break it down a little bit on the personal capacity as a pastor, I think which has walked with a fair bit of married couples, I've walked with men who fling around, came back and brought sexually transmitted disease to the wife. And having to work through that conversation and see the amount of pain that a woman has to go through is staggering. On a personal basis, when I was working in the corporate world, and some of you may have heard this old story, and we had a high management gathering and we went to Thailand. Why was it in Thailand? Was because Thailand closed a $200 over million deal where they had the capacity to actually took the whole world and came to Thailand, and we were there. And the beginning of the evening where the managing director, the CEO who stood on that stage, he didn't talk anything about the deal. He talked about everything. How did he make the deal? And when he came to the party, he talked about how they had dinner and took them to this sleazy place. And the more juice he added to the entire presentation, people began to clap, people began to laugh. And finally, when he ended the whole entire presentation, which is really a very sleazy kind of a talk about how he managed to get them to convince them to sign the deal with how many girls and all of that, the whole management team stood up and gave him standing ovation. I was the only one in out of the 200 of them that I sat down, refused to stand. And I will never forget my managing director who was next to me, just keep on asking me to say. And I look at her, I say, I'm not going to do it. Now, it's one thing to live in a culture where you tolerate. It's another thing when you live in a culture where people celebrate. And that's where our culture is. And that very night, it ends with, all that they experience tonight, you can experience. The entire management, I think there's only 4 to 5 of us who stayed back. And I still remember we were playing ping pong. It was me, it was a sales director from Singapore, one of my good friends, you know, and we just stayed back and we did not. Now, I want you to know, that's the world that we live in. Let me just move in to what the Bible has to say. Now, I hope I kind of gotten your attention. So I'm not someone who speaks out of vacuum. I'm someone who speaks out of phasing every day in and out the decision to be pure and walking through a real fair bit of people. Matthew chapter 19. The Bible says, have you not heard that he who created them from the beginning, so he took us all the way. He's the beginner. God is the one that created this whole thing. He says that, make them male and female and say, therefore a man shall leave his father, mother, hold fast to his wife, hold fast. Some of you need to hold fast. Some of you need to fast hold. I'm just kidding. Okay, just quickly hold, okay? And the two shall become one flesh, which really talk about an intimacy act. Now, the Bible's design is this. Sex, erotic love, is the final consummation of when both of you are united in your soul and whatever, and you express it in a bodily form when you get married. The whole concept of final consummation is very simple. If I study engineering for 4 years, the final consummation of studying engineering is at the end of the day, I graduated. The way God has designed intimacy is within the boundary of marriage. Why? Because it is in that boundary where you become so vulnerable to each other. that you can accept someone the way she is, the way he is, all of you loving someone or who she is. It is meant to be not just a physical transaction, or come with a little bit of the cultural thinking, but it is meant to be your entire soul and body express your love for each other. It was meant to be that. Paul took it forward, and Paul says, because of temptation, sexual immorality, each one should have his own wife, a woman, a husband. And then he says, do not remain single, and talk about the importance of exercising self-control, which is a big component of this area, all right? Then he says they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. It tells you a little bit about how the Bible talks about this area called passion. And you know, the honesty is this. Most of the people who have given their passion loosely will eventually lose their passion in any capacity, especially towards God. And I think that's the reality of the amount of people that I've seen and I've walked through. Okay, now, what does the world think about? This is what our culture think. Our culture think, and they're trying to sell this idea to us, it is merely physical. It is merely physical. Absolutely no problem. It's just a transaction. I've got physical need. And in fact, some of them will say, like, it's like hunger. You get hungry, you got to eat. So you got to do it because it's just merely physical. Now, the whole idea the culture is trying to sell is because it is physical, there's so many nuances to kind of promote that. Because it's physical, so that's why when you get married, you got to try first, lah. Try if it's compatible or not. And the better you are, the more practice you have, the better you are in the future, because it's like badminton. You practice more, you become better. God did not design us like that. Sex is something that you don't need to practice. Once you're in it, you naturally know what to do. It's like that. That's the way God has designed it. Okay? Now, let me just move on to a particular passage in the Bible, which is 1 Corinthians 6. I'm going to walk through that a little bit, and hopefully it gives you a little bit more understanding about this. Okay, so Paul says, and the background of 1 Corinthians was there was a lot of sexual promiscuity, and potentially very much like our culture today. In fact, Paul was saying that it was so bad that even some of the people whom slept with a stepmother, it was so bad. And Paul says it was so even embarrassed and ashamed to talk about this. So he kind of dedicate one chapter to deal with this. So he says here, he says, do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ, make them members of a prostitute? Never. Do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute, because by then in Corinth, there was this temple, and people were going to thousands over historically recorded of temple prostitute, which do worship and sexual together. By the way, if you ever look at any occultic expression, that is always one of the expression of a priest who had so many women and some of the promiscuity that happens with that. All right, then he says here, he says, he who joined to prostitute becomes one body with her. And the word join simply means it was so united that you can't even separate. It was almost like scrambled egg. You know, you put mayonnaise, whatever, you put it all. It was so scrambled that you cannot take mayonnaise out of it. You no longer can do that. So it says every time when you have an intimacy with someone, it wasn't just physical. You know why? Because it says the two shall become one flesh. He says you join one spirit, one soul. So it wasn't just a physical act. If it's just a physical act, I tell you there's a difference. And this is the difference. If I go to my wife, gosh, you don't even dare to say that, okay? But if I were to slap her, okay? Yeah, okay, yeah. She immediately responds. She told me, that was a horrible example, okay? If I were to slap a girl, okay? Okay, better move out of that zone, okay? And she gets upset, okay? But if I were to sexually abuse a girl or anyone, you know the depth and the comparison of a girl encountering that and the depth of the hurt of that is, the gulf is huge. It wasn't just physical. For you to be beaten, you moved on. But for you to be taken advantage sexually, That's why women were so difficult for them to report when they were raped. The amount of shame, the amount of weight of that emotional, so deep that you can't even actually know how deep is deep. For some of them, it takes years after years after years, and the shame that carries with them. And I honestly think only by the grace of God that someone can encounter absolutely purity and freshness and everything again. I honestly think that. So they will then work that through psychologically, they will work through cognitively, they will work through emotionally, but they carry that stain. How do I know that? How do I know that a sexual promiscuity or wrongness in that is so deep? You know, as a pastor, right? The moment someone says, "Pastor, can I see you? I've never shared with anybody about this." It took me a lot of courage to tell you about. The moment someone starts with that, I almost immediately know what the person is going to talk about. Now, if someone gets slapped, right? They don't say, "Pastor, I want to tell you something. I've never shared with anybody before." They never. They'll post it in Facebook. "This person slapped me. Everybody help me to slap him back." Are you with me? Because it's not merely physical. It's not. It goes way deeper than that. Which is why the Bible says whenever you do with that whole thing, it's so deep. Now, Paul continued to tell us in 1 Corinthians 6, I'm going to be a bit extra with the time, okay? Like I said, it's a lot of things to do, and then we'll do our best with the dialogue, okay? So Paul then says, flee from sexual immorality. He says, when it comes to this, he says, you just got to run. He says, don't be strong. Don't think like, I think I can manage. No, it's flee. He says, every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but a sexually immoral person sins against his own body. He says, this is the only category of sin. The impact and the effect of a person is so deep that no one exactly understood this verse. Did you know that? Scholars have been trying to, and some people will say, you know, that's why your HIV you see against your body is way, way, way more than that. It's like you have given yourself to someone and that was being betrayed and tear apart. And so can you imagine when I think about in today's world, when someone had such a promiscuity life of having 20 sexual partners and then they come in and then they take a 20 over people baggages into a marriage and then they tell you, "I'll be faithful to you." Did you know statistically, if someone is as such before the marriage, the possibility of someone to be as such after the marriage is way so high. And as a pastor, there was at least two occasions that I can recall. I have to work with a couple who just gotten married and within a week, they already had an affair. How do you piece the math together? And that's exactly where our culture is. It's the reality of the amount of sexual pressure that we go through. So the Bible says, whenever you do that, you sin against your body in the very deepest sense. So I've seen people who fell in this area and all of a sudden, something in them, the passion for God was just robbed away. They worship God, but they're just not there. They try to serve, but they're just not there. They need to come before God. Now, so if you're listening to all of this, if you are a young man, I want to implore, I want to appeal to you. If you do not believe the Bible, if you do not believe the Bible, you believe the statistics. Because the statistic tells you, and any psychological statistic that you go to, it will tell you the possibility of having greater depression, having greater extramarital, greater, if you do not guard your heart and wait until, that's why Song of Solomon says, he says, do not awaken that desire until the right time. 3 to 4 times, Solomon 2, Song of Solomon 3, Song of Solomon 5, it reminds us, it says, do not awake, do not awake, do not awake. If you are a married man, I want you to know that it is your job by the grace of God to stay pure, and you got to make that decision on a daily basis. What you watch, what you listen, who you talk to, who you open up your heart to. All right? Now, I want to move on a bit to the last part, and which is this. And I know that a lot of us, potentially, we had our own challenges. And I'm not here to condemn anybody. Neither am I here to tell you that I'm the best. I had my challenges. I need to learn how to guard my heart. I need to learn what it means to stay faithful, pure to my wife. And I like this verse because Paul in 1 Corinthians, as he describes about all these challenges, then he brings the factor of God. And then he says this. He says, do you not know that the uprightness will not inherit the kingdom, the unrighteousness will not inherit, do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolatrous, nor the adulterous, nor men who practice homosexuality, nor thieves, nor greed, nor drunkard, nor reviler. He gives the whole bunch of, and he was writing to Corinth church, he potentially know every one of them. He potentially know that, you know what, this guy is a drunkard, this guy is, he knew all of them because the church had so much problem. It's the city of Corinth, it's by the port, it's one of the most loose city ever. And then he says, and such were some of you. Would you read the last statement together with me? He says, but you were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by the, and he brought three elements. He says, you were washed. He says, if you're not happy, we just wash. He says, you're sanctified. And then finally, he says, you were justified. He wanted everybody to know, when sin abound, grace abound even more. He wanted everybody to know that no matter how messed up you can be, you must come to God. And only God can reboot this area of your life. I'm going to end with a little story. This is actually someone that me and my wife, we have the honor to journey. And at some part, way more my wife. But we were together. This is actually one of our, someone who came for discovering God. And eventually got saved. And one of the reasons the person came for discovering God was because what this person was going through. So let me tell you her story. She was in the first relationship. She never felt loved. There was a marriage. She was the one and she has to fork out for the husband's finances. And she never felt loved. She was just really someone that was there to serve him. The marriage didn't end well. She moved on. Seeking for love, she went for the second relationship. In that relationship, the man already gotten everything that he wants. Never wants to move forward. Just don't want to get married. Eventually, the relationship ended. She went to the third relationship. She said, in the third relationship, she was merely exploited and used. She was just a tool for him to enjoy. And she was lasted a very short while. She moved on to another fourth relationship. Thinking that this is the final relationship, then she found out that that man is actually married, had children, and she has given himself to him, and she was so cheated. She came out from that relationship absolutely hurt. It was in the smack of that entire failure after failure after failure, and I did not even talk about relationship prior before her marriage, first marriage. I'm just talking about at least that 4 to 5 that happens post. It was in that smack of don't know what to do. Nobody will love me again. Would I have a future? Whatever. She came for discovering God and sort of open up her life. And then this is what she wrote. She said, I experienced so many failed love. I thought to myself, maybe I'm not worthy to be loved at all. I'm a divorced woman. I failed in so many relationships. But I went, when I came to church, I felt love. I felt loved by God. I felt loved by God's people. I repented. I followed the commandment of God. And today I experienced a whole new brand kind of love. She eventually found the man that would love her. They're happily married. They are with us. And then she said, now God's love has helped me not just experience His love. God's love has helped me to love others. And I went to the husband. I said, when you knew about her past, how did you work that through? Then he said, when I knew about her past, I told myself, it is my job to love her back every sense of lost love that she has ever found, that she has experienced. My posture is to love her even more. And I love what he said at the end. He says, God's love is actually so strong. There is agape love. There is storge family's love. There is friends' love, a filial love, brothers and sisters. He says, when you combine all of that, that's the love that she deserves. And that's the love that I want to shower upon her. I will say this. There's no other greater, incredible love than the love of God that can take, no matter how difficult you were in your past, no matter how vulnerable you are in your present, no matter how messy you are in your current spot, but the love of God can re-piece that together. Humpty Dumpty sits on the wall, Humpty Dumpty falls. Only God's love can piece everything together. And that is what Paul talked about. You are washed, you are sanctified, and you can be justified.